Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll hear from Sonny Turner, former lead singer of The Platters. The Platters re-recorded many of their hits using Sonny and cranked out several new ones as well. Sonny Turner will be in San Bernardino soon with several other acts, including Norman Fox, who I spoke to as well. More on the concert later in the program. First, though, Norman Fox and the Rob Roys, still in high school when they first got together.
We would emulate the groups of the time, the Cleftones, the Cadillacs, the Eldorados, and people of that nature. We used to listen to the disc jockey in our area was Alan Freed.
Oh, my gosh,
and,
yeah.
I used to listen to him religiously. We tried to put a group together, and we interviewed. We used to sing in the bathroom where there was an echo in the boys' bathroom.
Sure, sure.
In the high school. So we went down to the record shop in the South Bronx, and we met the executive from a company called Backbeat Records. It was a division of Duke Records out of Houston, Texas. And Duke originally, it was basically a black label, and they had a very, very big hit, which was Pledging My Love by Johnny Ace.
Oh, well, yeah, wow.
So they made a lot of money with that, and then they wanted to get into a little more group harmony. They were looking for groups, and they liked us. They liked the sound. They liked us. We were also an interracial group.
Mm-hmm.
We had three white members and two black members, and they liked that idea. And so they signed us, and we went from there.
That was really something that I wanted to ask you about, in the fact that you were one of very, very few racially integrated groups. Maybe the Del Vikings around the same time out of Pittsburgh, but you guys weren't exactly Facebook friends at that point. And some groups, I mean, this really affected their performances, especially down south.
We had a lot of problems. There was no question about it. We would only be played by the black radio stations because in those days you had no TV. We were not on TV, and they didn't know that I was white. I sounded black. And so, yeah, we were interviewed by all of the black radio stations in the New York area, and we had a lot of trouble getting played by the mainstream white radio stations.
Mm.
So, yeah, we had our time of it. It was an experience.
Were there ever any times I've spoken with various folks about this? Of course, it doesn't happen to everybody, but you, for example, they thought that you were black, not having seen pictures. Any times where you got to a venue and they raised the curtain and then all of a sudden a hush goes over the audience?
I had an experience actually in a show in Sunnyside, Queens in New York, and the disc jockey who put on the show was Jocko. I don't know whether you've heard of him or not. He was a great disc jockey, a local guy, and primarily the audience was black. And so when the curtain came up and I came out and we started singing, some guy in the first or second row started ranting and raving because I was white. And apparently he liked the sound of the group, but he was disappointed that I was white. And it was a very, very disconcerting situation for me. I mean, I was only a kid. I didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, it's easy enough for me to say, like, well, the shoe's on the other foot. But yeah, it's a little bit harsh. You were a kid, like you said. You didn't know. And they were faulting you for being white.
Exactly right.
Well, you were speaking about practicing in the school bathroom, not at all uncommon with the wonderful acoustics and all that going on in there. Subway stations, I know, that sort of thing. So I've spoken with various folks from various groups of the street corners having their own groups. You ever run into these guys in the bathroom practicing? You guys go in with the Rob Roys or the Velvetones at that point, and oh, there you find one of the other guys that should have been on one of the other corners singing.
No, actually, there was two or three groups in the school at the time.
Mm.
We actually were not the first group. The name of the school was Dewitt Clinton, and there was a group called the Clintonians.
Mm.
They had a very nice sound. I would say there were three or four groups in the school at the same time. I don't believe that any of them went on to make any records or get any substantial forward motion in the business, but we were lucky enough to be able to do that.
Gotcha. At this upcoming performance, there's also Larry Chance and the Urals, another Bronx group. Were they around at the same time, different neighborhoods?
Larry Chance was a little later, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm, okay.
I think he was a little later, and he was from a different neighborhood. But close. basically, it was all close.
Okay. Now, just a little bit more about this time period, and I know you probably wouldn't remember specifics, but I'm not looking for specifics at this point. Again, various folks have described it different ways, but I'd love to hear of the scene in those days with the folks on the street corner, every other street corner maybe. A couple of guys described it as you were either a fighter or a singer in that era.
That's a good way to describe it. I may have been both, to be quite honest with you. I don't know.
Okay.
I was a little bit of a tough guy growing up in the East Bronx. You had to be. But yeah, it was just great singing everywhere. In addition, we sang in the subways as well. We actually sang in the train because I lived in the north end of the Bronx, and I used to take the train to get down to rehearse one of the fellas that lived in Harlem. So we used to switch off houses, and we used to get down to Harlem.
Okay.
And so we used to get into the subway, and we would practice and start singing, and it was a common thing.
Oh, tell me you love me, and say you'll be my dearest one. Tell me why the stars in the sky, well, they're the same kind of stars that I see in your eyes. I love you, yes I do.
Now, let's go on to Tell Me Why. This was the first recorded and the first released, is that right?
Yes, it was.
This one was written by the bass player, Buzzy Helfand?
It was written by both of us.
Oh, okay.
By me and Buzzy, but what happened was, in those days, the A&R man that came to interview us at the record store and actually signed us, he put his name as a writer on the record.
Yeah, Carter, right.
That's the way that it was in those days. That's how it happened to be Helfand and Carter as the writers on the record. But it was basically me and Buzzy who wrote the song together.
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of old, say, Duke Ellington things with Irving Mills' name on it. It comes out as Ellington Mills or Strayhorn Mills. So,
Correct. Yeah,
that's nothing new there.
Well, it was a sign of the times, and that's what
sure.
They did. I also had it when I signed with Capitol. The A&R man did the same thing to a couple of my songs.
Mm.
And I actually was able to get that back, but many, many years later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. I'm glad you were. I mean, no matter when it happened, I am glad that it happened. Unfortunate that it happened the way it did. So when you guys put this one together, did one of you guys have sort of the tune and he had the bass line, or was he, who came to who with what?
He basically came to me with the first lines, which were the chorus line.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why. Why the stars in the sky? And when it went into the middle part of the song, I wrote those tune and the lyric to that end.
Okay.
And then we went back to the chorus. That's how it worked. And he also was a bass, and I was the lead singer, so it came together very well.
Music from Norman Fox and the Rob Roys. Conversation with Norman Fox. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts at 91.9 FM and streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Norman Fox and the Rob Roys are amongst many acts performing in San Bernardino August 18th with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2, along with Charles Weldon, Jimmy Clanton, Kathy Young, Gene Chandler, the Dukes of Doo-Wop, Larry Chance and the Earls, and Sonny Turner of the Platters. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. We'll have conversation with Sonny Turner later in the program. Back now to Norman Fox. By the way, before we go too far, I know the name, the Rob Roys, that came from the drink, the Rob Roy, but why the initial change from the Velvetones to begin with?
Yes, the original name of the group was the Velvetones, but the record company did not like that name, so they wanted us to come up with another name, and when I went through it, I remember the Rob Roy drink was a very sexy drink at that period of time.
Gotcha.
And even though we were kids, I don't know, it sort of attracted me, so I came up and I submitted the name to them, and they loved it. That's how we became the Rob Roy.
That's cool. That's much better than ginger ale. Nice, nice.
Tell me why.
were standing on the sidewalk just admiring the view. And we thought that we would go downtown and find something to do. And we saw this place upon the corner and it looked real swell. So we opened the door and we went inside. This is what we yell now, pizza. Hey, pizza.
Pizza Pie and Dream Girl. Pizza Pie is, again, another one of my favorites in there. And it's just really talking about not only pizza, but also talking about this girl. And it's walking into a pizza joint. This one, again, I don't know who wrote this. We have Dream Girl on the flip side, by the way. Who wrote this one? Who's responsible for Pizza Pie?
I wrote both of them. I wrote Dream Girl myself, and I wrote Pizza Pie myself. Those were the first two sides that we recorded for Capitol. Pizza Pie was something that I wrote because it was long before they had a pizza parlor on every corner. And I used to go to my favorite Italian restaurant, you know, on weekends and have this huge pizza pie with my friends. And I just loved it. And I thought that it would be a great subject for a song. And that's how that came about. Pizza Pie. The flip side of that, and actually today it's probably the most popular song that we have, and I wrote that on the subway. I was going to school, and I remember sitting in the subway, and the subway car would sway, and I would hear the clicking of the track, and I was lonesome at the time, and I wrote this song. I must have written the song in 5 minutes. That was the basic part of the song, and then I went on and I sort of made it a little better from there and just clipped it a little bit, but yeah, that's my favorite song.
Nice. And was it written, say, for anybody in particular? Did you have somebody in mind? I mean, you said you were lonely, but still.
I was lonely at that point. I was looking for somebody, and so I wrote a song called Dream Girl. Consequently, I met my dream girl, and I was married to her for 43 years until she passed away about 10 years ago.
Hmm.
I moved to California at that time. And I met another dream girl, and so I'm with her. So I've been very lucky in love, and it's all because of Dream Girl.
Nice. Wow. A self-fulfilling prophecy with that one. And again, it worked out quite well for you quite a few times in various ways, so that's pretty sweet. Now, I noticed that before you left Backbeats and went to Capitol, there was probably, I guess, just a contractual snafu, maybe just to put it politely. But weren't you really sort of forced to record maybe 5 more songs and hopefully get out of your contract with Backbeat?
Backbeat had Tell Me Why, and they followed up with the Dance Girl Dance, and we never got paid. And I wasn't going to continue to work for nothing, so we wanted to leave the label. And in order to leave, we had to make a deal because we were contractually attached to him. So the deal that was made was to cut about 5 extra songs that he could release, and that's what we did. So I don't believe that they were ever released, but those were the 5 songs that we did for him.
Now, something that I'd love to hear about, this is something when we spoke on the phone last week or so, you spoke of playing the Catskills, and again, I have to mention that I forget which artist I was speaking with, but he spoke about a certain stretch of clubs and highways, and it was actually known as the Route or the Corridor or something like that. It was the place to play, the country clubs and all that, Poconos.
There were different areas that entertained the New Yorkers at that time because people got in their cars and they went on vacation. They did not get on airplanes and fly to Florida or to California. The Poconos was one place where they had a group of hotels, and in the Catskills, they had another group of hotels, Grossinger's and the Concord and Laurel's. these young groups used to go up there, and yeah, you could make a living doing that. A lot of the young comedians did the same thing.
Did you ever end up meeting, say, some comedian who ended up huge later on, but at that point he was just this unknown Red Fox or whatever, you know?
No, I actually didn't. I met a lot of people when I was working in the Catskills, but they were already established. I mean, I met Sammy Davis Jr., who was a major leaguer, and I just loved to watch him perform. And Don Rickles, people of that caliber, those were the people that I met, but they were already established. We also met when we were up there at one of the gigs that we did, the Supremes. They had just started out and they were playing. That was terrific as well.
Nice. There's another cool tune that I enjoyed, and that's Do Re Mi. And again, this is something that starts off quite slow and then picks up into a nice tempo thing. I have to know, was this just somebody playing with the scales just in a doo-wop fashion, taking the standard?
Yes.
Yeah?
That's basically it. It was a subject, you know, as to where the music began. Came into my head at one point to write something about the history, how the music began. And it's the first thing that I remember when I was taught in school was Do Re Mi. So that's where that song came from.
Who was first, you or Julie Andrews in Sound of Music doing that?
It's got to be me, although she did a much better job.
That's Norman Fox. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll hear from Sonny Turner of the Platters. Sonny will be in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2, the complete lineup and more on the concert at affordablemusicproductions.com. Back now to conversation with another of the performers, Norman Fox of the Rob Roys. You know, I wanted to know of some or one or any of the tunes, like those five that you did to end your contract with Backbeat, or let's just say some songs that maybe were released. What were a few that you think should have been bigger?
Oh, there's a song called That's Love. It's a fabulous song. I think we did that for Capitol. That was never released. The song Lonely Boy, that was never released. There are just a number of them. Time Records was the first guy. His name was Bobby Shadd, and he ran Mercury Records for a lot of years, and then he went into business by himself, and he started the ping-pong stereo sound. When stereo first came out, he was responsible for that. And a very interesting, bright guy, and he signed us up, but he never released the records. And then I left the business. I went into the Army, and that was it.
And now at some point there was a reunion for a show in 1971. This was, I believe, a well-known disc jockey put this together for one night. And I'd love to hear about how that came together, who called who. And I understand everybody but Buzz got together.
It's a very interesting story. I got a call from one of the members of my group who received a call from somebody who wanted to put us into a show. And the show was at Hunter College Auditorium in New York. It's a big place. They were going to have two shows, one at 8 o'clock and one at 12 o'clock midnight. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do the show because I was going fishing the following day. And I was taking some customers out on a boat from Long Island. And I had to be up at 4:30 in the morning in order to get out there for everything to be set. And so I didn't want to do the show. And I really, this was the first revival show that anybody had ever called me about. Finally, I reneged and I said, okay, I would do it. And it was an unbelievable show because I didn't realize the kind of interest in doing this kind of music I thought had already passed. But I looked out in the street between the two shows. First of all, they were both complete sellouts. And when I looked out in the street at the intermission between the two shows, the street was packed. They had to close the street. There were so many people. It was very, very exciting and a very, very interesting thing. And that's when I started getting interested in coming back and doing these revival shows. We did a couple of shows in Barcelona, and it was packed with people, and there was nobody in the audience over 40. Young people are really embracing this music in Europe, so it's very exciting.
How about here in the States? Do you recall a point when you suddenly started seeing more and more younger people in the audience?
Volume? Yeah, I would say it was about 7-8 years ago. I was noticing that there were more young people in the audience.
Now, you guys got together again. Was it Robert Thier once again to gather you and others together in 1986 to become the Rob Roys once again?
Yes.
Okay, so I'd love to hear of this call, or was this floating around the table for a while, or was it just really out of left field?
Well, basically, it was out of left field. We started getting calls to do more and more of these shows in different parts of the country. We got everybody together, and we started doing these shows, and we loved it.
Were you still surprised by the turnout and the loyal following for this type of music, this era of music?
I never stopped being surprised.
Okay.
I never stopped being surprised. I love the audiences. I love their passion for the music. I have wonderful conversations with them. Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful that they still love the music and that they still love me and the music that I make.
Now, it was, I think, in the early 90s, something that I read that I'd love to hear fleshed out. In 91 and then again in 93, there were a cappella recordings. First Pizza Pie and Tell Me Why and Dream Girl, Your Way, I believe. And then a couple years later, there were some others, including your daughter, singing on these. But these a cappella versions, was this an intent to get enough together for a full album release? Or was this just fun? Or
well, the a cappella came from a record company called Starlight Records back east, who only dealt in a cappella recording. He came to us and wanted to know whether we would do a recording in a cappella of some of our songs. And yeah, I didn't see any problem with it. As a matter of fact, I liked it. We always liked singing a cappella. So we went ahead and we did this. And he did so well with it, I think that we did 2 or 3 more sessions with him. As far as my daughter is concerned, my daughter was a singer-songwriter. And she was the first female artist signed to DreamWorks when they went into business a number of years ago. That's how she moved to California. And she was having trouble with her live act. She's a great performer with a great personality and a very, very talented girl, but stage fright and so forth and so on. So I said to her, listen, why don't you come and sing with us a little bit? Get yourself used to being in front of a large audience and see how it works for you. And so she did. She was with us for about 3 years. People loved her. She used to sing wonderful songs. She has a beautiful voice, and she sang a lot of Frankie Lyman stuff. So it rounded out the act. I just loved the fact that she was with us and traveling with us, and it worked out for her, and she was great.
Nice. When you perform these days, and by these days, I mean specifically in San Bernardino, August 18th, but more generally speaking, when you perform these days, are there any numbers that you do a cappella? You just tell the band to hush for a few moments? Anything like that?
Well, I didn't plan on doing it at San Bernardino, but we do it at a certain point. We've actually done it a number of times when the band doesn't have the music. If the band, we'll sing a cappella, and the audience really does love a cappella. So, yeah, it depends on the situation, but we can do it at any time.
So I guess regarding this show coming up, with so many acts on the lineup, that also means less time for each lineup. So, do you lead off with hits? Do you save them for the close?
Usually we save them for the close. In this show in San Bernardino, I am thinking of starting off with Dance Girl Dance because it's an up-tempo number, going into Dream Girl, which is a slow number, getting into Pizza Pie, and then winding up with Tell Me Why.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. That's music from Norman Fox and the Rob Roys in conversation with Norman Fox. Norman Fox and the Rob Roys will be in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. More on the concert at affordablemusicproductions.com, though now we turn to another part of the lineup, Sonny Turner, or as he answers the phone.
This is Sonny Turner the Burner. Doing well, sir.
Sonny Turner the Burner. That wasn't written into my introduction, but believe me, it is now.
So. Yeah.
I'm going to admit, I'm excited. I'm talking to a platter, so if this bleeds through, hey, that's just how it is.
Well, I'm just grateful. It's stimulating. It's at this point, at this stage of my life and my career, I'm really highly enthused and still motivated.
That's something that, of course, the audience is thankful for as well, the fact that you are still bringing the music to the people. I would love to just start this by asking, how much of your time these days is spent performing? I'm trying to get a sense of what your days, or maybe nights, as the case may be, are like for you.
About 9 months of the year, in and out, around the world, and across the country, back and forth, about 9 months of the year. It slows down because of different changes in the entertainment industry, of course you know that. Things have changed over the years, from 78 recordings to 45s and 33 and a third, to 8-track, to cassettes, and now...
Yeah.
We're in a whole different world, my friend.
Oh, yeah. There's always new technology to try to bake the reel-to-reels so that they'll still play and not snap off on your player and all that.
Yes. Now that we've come back, now that I understand vinyl is very popular again. I've heard that a couple of years ago, that it may return to the Europeans. I think they started that in England, or some of the college students that took a liking to the sound. How warm the sound was, and it was a little richer sound than the actual CD.
Harder to lug to the gig to try to sell, but...
Well, you know, back in the day, as they say, I was merchandising my first produced albums, and it went pretty good. But the care of it, the managing of it, is the only thing that you have to be careful about. It being vinyl, of course, and being warped in the sun, or either mismanaged or broken, that type of thing. But it's still, I think it's worthwhile if you treasure anything of quality. I'm just tickled to find that this is the new sound for the new generation, you know, and it just, I'm very pleased about it. Actually, when they hold up an album cover in the late night shows, you see all these TV shows at late night, and you say, man, does that bring back some memories?
Oh, yeah. Everything old is new again.
That's right. That's it. That's it.
Sonny, when you were talking about pushing your early records, are you by chance speaking of Metrotone recordings? Were there any recordings of the Metrotones?
Well, actually, yeah, there were. Rhino Records. Don Roby out of Texas recorded us. We have that. Actually, I'm on three recordings, you know, 345 singles that I recorded with the Metrotone. Matter of fact, I wrote two of the songs. Recorded, and then we sang the one that was recorded and written by the female vocalist who subsequently became my wife in our early years, Lavinia Eaton, and she wrote a crazy song called Skitter Scatter. She was the only one that could sing the words. We were just amazed at her ability to just not only write the song, but to sing it, so she had to teach it to us verb by verb. Witter, watter, whippy, woppy, slippy, sloppy. That was some of the lyrics.
I'm sure that have to be written out every single time. Now, was she part of the lineup when you guys were opening for Red Fox back in Cleveland, your early days?
No, that was after the group had separated. A couple of guys were drafted into the service. That's what really broke up the Metrotones.
Okay.
But we had a pretty good run for a local group of kids out of Cleveland. And matter of fact, luckily for us, we adhered to the quality side of music, you know. And she was not a part of that. But we later became good friends in the group when they hired me or joined the group. And then we later became good friends and husband and wife later on.
Beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, going to the Platters, you replaced Tony Williams, it looks like, in late 1959. I understand there were 100 singers that auditioned for the spot.
That's what they told me. And I said, well, okay. Because I was told that by Buck Ram and by Mr. Harry Siebel, who was the Clevelander who found me for Buck Ram.
Buck is the manager for the Platters for a bunch of years.
Yeah, Ram being the manager, yes.
And so was it a cattle call with literally, you know, 100 people?
Well, not exactly. Okay. What it was that after the Metrotones had departed because of being inducted into the service, a couple of the guys, and I went on as a single, to make a long story short, Levine and I became closer and what have you, and became a soloist in and around Cleveland and Canada and Detroit and different places, having been known to have that group, the Metrotones, and we were quite popular at that time. And after the guys were drafted into the service, I started to sing, and the venues accepted me as a singer, performer, opening act for big name performers.
This conversation with Sonny Turner and Music from the Platters. I'm David Fleming with you for KVCR. It's at 91.9 FM and streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Sonny Turner will be among several acts performing in San Bernardino August 18th with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. With the Platters, you were at the helm for a number of hits in the mid-60s, but when you joined the group, when you replaced Williams when he left, by the time you joined them, they already had so many known songs. Did you have any feeling of, say, mighty big shoes to fill? And I don't mean Williams' shoes directly, but just to continue this well-established sound.
I most certainly did. I was very conscious of that, and I was so struck with the idea of being in that position, you know, and hoping that I could get a chance to show them and give them the idea that they had confidence in me and secure that confidence by having some hit records. And later on, I did. I have three in a row and a couple of albums. You know, that was great for me. Yeah, I was, boy, I mean, big shoes to fill, of course.
You were only, what, 19 maybe? 19, 20?
19 years old, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I can't imagine that. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was being inducted into the Hall of Fame in later years, but also being asked to sing lead. And again, I use the expression to fill some big shoes. I mean, Tony was not just a very accepted singer across the country. He was well-renowned, right, as I found out as I took his place singing and traveling with the Platters throughout the world. I'm telling you, it increases the excitement for me and the knowledge of, wow, I'm not believing I'm still in this position. It took me 2 or 3 years to really calm down from the excitement and the expectation of being in that position and hoping and rehearsing and keeping myself in a good condition to perform out of respect for that position I was in. He was quite a well-known performer, a lead singer. He was one of the greats.
Certainly. But you found acceptance with the audience. You didn't
Yes, that's what pleased me so much is that when I did take it, I knew I would be confronted with people not being sure that they would like me or I wasn't sure. And when I found acceptance, I was really pleased and that to help my stability as a replacement performer.
Right. Wasn't there a period, maybe just a couple of years, when Mercury Records was refusing to release non-Williams singles, so you guys sort of had to write out the contract?
Yes, that was true. They hated losing the goose that laid the golden eggs, of course. I had to understand that. Yeah. And Buck Graham and Art Talmadge, who was also an executive at Mercury, they seemed to have accepted me and liked me as the lead singer. The group voted to keep me as a lead singer.
Oh, beautiful.
And against any opposition from Mercury, and that's what made the separation of Mercury and the Platters. And we went to Music Core Records, and that was a hit record. I Love You a Thousand Times. But Luther Dixon and his wife, Inez Fox, wrote that for me. And the music was changing, too, in a certain respect.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up I Love You a Thousand Times, I noted that with the early Platters, you think of The Great Pretender, Only You, certainly Twilight Time, but some of the tunes that you helped bring the Platters back to prominence with, I Love You a Thousand Times, With This Ring, Washed Ashore, I was noticing these were all a little bit more upbeat. So was this
Motown
direction?
Motown had taken hold of the world.
There's a Motown
and,
thing?
In order for us to stay relevant, we had to not change the style of the Platters so much, but the musical content to stay relevant in that market. We did it. And Luther Dixon, when he heard and saw me singing, he said, we got a song for him. It's going to be a hit record because this young fellow's got the versatility to sing this kind of music also.
Try a Little Tenderness. That is a song that goes back way further than I ever thought, back to like Ray Noble and further. And with that, so many different reference points for various people with that song. So I'm curious what the big version of that was when the Platters chose to tackle that one.
Buck was trying to have a variety, looking to capitalize on the trend or the genre of that day, that time. You won't recall.
regret it, 'cause my heart won't forget it. Love is my whole happiness. It's very easy, just try a little tenderness.
Conversation with Sonny Turner and music from the Platters in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2, along with Kathy Young, Gene Chandler, and several others. More on the concert at affordablemusicproductions.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming.
The Platters did have a lot of original tunes, Twilight Time being one that existed as an instrumental first, but Buck brought in vocals for that. Now, the Platters also covered many well-known tunes, and so I'm curious if this was a case of Buck Ram saying, this is the tune that you folks should cover, or some of the band, you enjoyed singing it, so it ended up on the records.
The Platters had a style, as you know, the signature style of romance and quality type of arrangements. So there were, say, ebb-tide songs, such as Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, you know, written by Jerome Kern. Held us in good stead to stay with that type of feel, but not to go too far by the Motown type of feel. So I think the choices were, I think, treated with respect for what the Platters style was, not to go too far afield.
Nice.
All who love are blind.
Well, now, sometime in the mid-60s, were you a part of the lineup that Nate Nelson from the Flamingos?
Yeah, lead singer for the Flamingos.
Right.
Only Have Eyes for You. That's his voice on that hit record.
Exactly. So when he joined the lineup, did you guys end up having some Flamingo tunes thrown into the Platters' live performances?
Yeah,
and
we did.
He's right there.
In fact, I mean, why waste a fabulous voice
right.
like that?
You know? Yeah.
We did I'll Be Home. And here's another factor about the melodies of the songs. He did If I Had You, Could Show the World How to Smile. You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
And he did a fabulous job on the stage singing those particular songs. Yeah, we incorporated songs that he recorded and then for his style. It worked very well.
We referenced this earlier. Just very recently, I spoke with several members of groups like the Marcells and the Skyliners and the Drifters, you know, Charlie Thomas there. And one of the things that we spoke of was the British invasion and how it really affected what the groups like the Platters and like the Skyliners, the doo-wop, the late 50s, early 60s groups.
Well, it was just a change. It was time for a change, musical feel, you know. And we traveled through England and different places, and the Platters' music was dominant in their countries. And I think it was a time for a change when the Beatles came into the forefront with their style. You know, if you remember, they covered a lot of Chuck Berry and Little Richard when they first started out.
Certainly.
And to introduce themselves to the American public. Then they started, Paul and John Lennon, start writing for themselves, you know. I like their later music myself, the songs that those guys wrote that introduced and made the Beatles who they were.
Absolutely.
No. So it was acceptable. It was all good. I think after a while it became a good mix. The British sound and the American sound became a good mix. They covered a lot of American artists, mostly the black artists that was recording. They covered a lot of the rock and roll music.
So I guess we think of the British invasion, these guys coming over here and changing the music, but in all honesty, we've got the people that were performing over here, like yourself, going over to England, and you're showing the roots of the Stones and the Beatles.
Right. The Rolling Stones, all the different groups in England were copying, borrowing, let's say, and from the American artist here. Yeah. You know, and I thought it was a good exchange because we were really strong in Europe and South America and different places. So it's all the world of music. The variety of music is the whole world a stage of enjoyment from all these various different artists. So I didn't mind it. And they call it the invasion. We invaded them too.
Well, you were with, let's say, Buck's Platters, what, until 1970? I think it was in the mid-60s when we started seeing all these different splinter groups carrying variations of the Platters' names.
Yeah, that was unfortunate for any time that you have a big, well-known entity like the Platters. You know, even the Drifters, they had a lot of people, unscrupulous promoters, would try to present to the various parts of the musical world illegitimately. And they didn't mind disregarding the fact that the people pay money to see the actual group. And a lot of people weren't aware that these people were imposters. You know, so the deception was too widespread. That was unfortunate. Still today, you have people out there performing, calling themselves the Platters. Or I've known of three or four different guys calling themselves the lead singer of the Platters.
Mm.
Even in Germany, I saw it on the internet, there's a white guy who claims to be the lead singer of the Platters. And he has three black backup singers, and he's the lead singer of the Platters. I just fell out of my chair.
Conversation with Sonny Turner and music from the Platters. I'm David Fleming with you for KVCR. It's on 91.9 FM and streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Sonny Turner is among several acts performing in San Bernardino August 18th with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. I was looking at some numbers, and this is amazing. 40 charting singles. There's also a compilation out there, The Platters' Best 100 Songs.
Yes. There's a beautiful 9-CD pack put out by Bear Family Records in Germany, and it's about 200 songs in that particular album. Matter of fact, we recorded an entire album of Latino music in Spanish. The Platters sing Latino.
Had no idea.
Yes, sir. And then there's one called The Platters' Christmas and several other albums and a lot of songs that people have not really heard throughout the years, you know, in that 9-CD pack. It was well done, beautifully done.
Did you speak Spanish before that album?
Sí, como no. Yo hablo un poquito. You know, yo hablo mucho canciones para él.
I see. Okay, then did you celebrate Christmas before the... We were speaking earlier of the Tony Williams era and the era with you, but the thing is, when people come to see the Platters, they're looking for Platters music. They're not there looking for the Williams Platters or the Sonny Turner Platters. Whether it's your, quote, era or Tony Williams era, what do you always make sure to open with? Something that just grabs the people and says, the Platters.
My opening number, a lot of times, is With This Ring, and then we go into a medley of the Platters. We start with Twilight Time, Magic Touch, The Great Pretender, Only You, Smoke It's in Your Eyes. Then we have a little interlude there, and we go on and we talk about my career with the Platters and what people are really interested in. And then we go into Harbor Lights, Red Cells in the Sunset, My Prayer, and such as that, One in a Million, Heaven on Earth, a lot of the musically histrionic of the Platters,
Here's one that could go nowhere, or it could be really interesting. When Freddie Mercury got to number 4 on the charts in England with The Great Pretender. I read that Buck Ram was really pleased with the success, but had no idea who Freddie Mercury was. So I want to know if you, Sonny, if you knew who Freddie was when this song was resurfacing 32 years after the Platters' premiere of it.
Of course, Queen.
Yeah,
the group called Queen. They were great singers, too. Incidentally, there was a movie called Night of the City with Robert De Niro. And in the credits, when the credits rolled, they played Freddie Mercury's version. But during the movie, when De Niro walked into this bar and was talking to somebody, they were playing my version of it. So that was delightful.
Is that the kind of thing that you know about ahead of time, or do you watch the movie and say, hey, that's me?
Oh, I was surprised by that. I didn't know about
you
it
were.
Ahead of time. My daughter.
I had no
idea. Too much and saw the movie with the Anthony Hopkins and Hearts of Atlantis. She called me and said, Dad, I just came out of the movie. So I said, yeah. She said, hey, you're singing the track, so you're in the movie. And they said three songs and say, that's your voice. And I said, what? Then I rented the movie, and sure enough, they don't tell you. They just go ahead and do it like they just did the I Love You a Thousand Times, the McDonald's commercial.
Oh,
with
no.
A young lady singing Today's Style. She sang I Love You a Thousand Times on the commercial.
I don't know if I want to hear that. I knew Freddie would give proper tribute to any song that he sings written by anybody, but
oh, yeah,
I don't know about
this
McDonald's.
He's quite a performer himself, yeah. Queen, I knew exactly who that was.
Oh, love him.
Never thought so much love could fit in a little band of gold. But I'm telling you, darling, I feel it in my heart, got it in my soul. With this ring, I promise I'll always love, always love you. With this ring, I promise I'll always love you.
Conversation with Sonny Turner and music from the Platters. Sonny Turner will be among several other acts performing in San Bernardino August 18th with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. That includes Charles Weldon, Jimmy Clanton, Kathy Young, Gene Chandler, the Dukes of Doo-Wop, Larry Chance and the Earls, and Norman Fox and the Rob Roys. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. And that wraps up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Norman Fox, Sonny Turner, and with Affordable Music Productions, Nathan Gothels. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Shireen Awad, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org. And thanks again.